Think about the last time you were walking down a city sidewalk. You probably saw, like, a pigeon pecking at some random debris near a storm drain, stepped around it, and just completely ignored it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they just blend right into the urban concrete. Most people consider them this mild nuisance, just a byproduct of city living that basically only occupies your peripheral vision.
Right. But imagine walking past a broken piece of a billion-dollar communication satellite lying in the gutter and just kicking it aside. Because when you look at a pigeon, you are actually looking at one of the most sophisticated, world-changing pieces of telecommunications technology in human history.
It really is. It's a biological machine, one that functioned as humanity's paramount high-speed data network for literally thousands of years. I mean, they shaped the borders of early empires and practically drove the first modern financial markets.
Okay, let's unpack this. For today's deep dive, we are pulling from the Wikipedia archives on the homing pigeon, and our mission today is to completely shatter that whole urban nuisance perception.
Yeah, we really need to reframe how we look at them.
Exactly. We're exploring how this single ancient bird species functioned as this invisible web that held early human civilization together. And honestly, how its underlying biological mechanisms still rival modern silicon-based technology today.
Yeah, to really understand their historical utility, we have to look at the sheer physical specifications of the bird itself, Columbolivia domestica. Because humans bred these descendants of the wild rock doe for one highly specific, biologically hardwired trait.
Which is just this overwhelming drive to return to their nest, right?
And physically, they operate at an astonishing baseline. We are talking about an animal that maintains average flight speeds of 60 miles per hour over distances of 600 miles.
That's highway speed.
Exactly.
And with a tailwind, or, in the case of those top-tier racing lineages, they can hit top speeds of 100 miles per hour. And their maximum range stretches up to 1,100 miles in a single flight.
Which is just staggering when you think about it.
To put that in perspective for you, that is basically equivalent to flying from New York City all the way to Florida, driven solely by the psychological imperative to just go home.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to remember what communication looked like back then. Before the advent of the telegraph, the absolute maximum speed of human communication was strictly limited by the physical speed of a galloping horse or a sailing ship riding the trade wind.
Which was not fast.
Not at all. So the homing pigeon really represents the moment humanity first went wireless.
And the historical footprint of that wireless network is just massive. I mean, our sources document a pigeon post being utilized in ancient Egypt as early as 1350 BCE.
Oh, yeah. And by the first century CE, you have Pliny the Elder writing extensively about their integration into Roman military logistics. They were carrying 10 dispatches all across the Mediterranean.
They were even the broadcast medium for announcing the winners of the ancient Olympic Games across the Greek city-states.
Right, but integrating them into an actual empire requires a really continuous, complex logistical chain.
Because you can't just release a bird from the capital and tell it to find some remote outpost.
Exactly. It only flies home. So by the year 1167, the Sultan Nur ad-Din established this heavily structured, functioning mail service between Baghdad and Syria.
They essentially built a network of organic relay stations.
Yeah, and maintaining that flow of information meant you had to constantly transport caged birds outward from the capital via caravans. That ensured local governors always possessed a direct, high-speed uplink back to the center of power.
And Genghis Khan utilized a remarkably similar avian relay network to hold his expanding conquests together across the Asian steppe.
Because information asymmetry is the foundation of empire building. The entity that receives data first controls the geopolitical landscape.
Which is a principle that translates perfectly to modern financial markets. Which brings us to Paul Reuter in 1860.
Oh, this is a great example.
Yeah, so Reuter identified a crucial gap in the early fragmented telegraph lines between Brussels and Aachen. Instead of relying on trains or couriers on horseback to carry financial data across that dead zone, he established a fleet of 45 pigeons.
Just flying news and stock prices back and forth.
Right. And that fleet provided him with an immediate monopoly on fresh financial information in Europe. It's basically the 1860 equivalent of high-frequency trading algorithms.
It really is.
I mean, today, Wall Street firms spend billions of dollars tunneling through mountains just to lay perfectly straight fiber optic cables, all to shave mere milliseconds off algorithmic data transfers. Reuters achieved the exact same structural market advantage by purchasing a flock of birds.
Birds capable of flying 60 miles an hour. He literally flew his data above the competition.
And New York City newspapers executed the exact same strategy with the Halifax Intercept.
Right, because Halifax, Nova Scotia was the closest North American port to Europe. So rather than waiting for transatlantic ships to travel down the coast and dock in New York Harbor, newspapers dispatched reporters to Halifax.
To literally intercept the news.
Exactly. They intercepted the incoming European vessels, extracted the international news, and attached the notes to homing pigeons. The birds bypassed the maritime journey entirely,
allowing the newspapers to publish the dispatches before the ships even arrived in the city. That velocity provided an incredible competitive edge.
It really did.
But when you adapt that biological speed for warfare, you hit a massive logistical wall. And here, I actually want to push back on the romanticized concept we often hold of the messenger bird.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, we picture this noble animal taking a dispatch from a soldier and bravely flying out to deliver it to an ally in need. But in reality, the system is strictly one way. A pigeon only flies to its home roost. It's not delivering mail out of loyalty. We literally just weaponize an animal's desperate instinct to get back to its bed.
What's fascinating here is how ingenious humans were to adapt that innate behavior. Because, yeah, if an infantry unit needs to send a dispatch from the front lines back to headquarters, they first have to manually carry those caged pigeons from the headquarters out into the trenches.
Which sounds awful for the birds.
It was. We just attached a payload to its leg and released it into a chaotic environment.
Now, humans did develop a slight workaround by placing a pigeon's food at one location and their home roost at another. You can condition them to fly back and forth reliably, covering round trips up to 100 miles twice a day.
But fundamentally, the bird is just attempting to reach a location where it feels safe and fed.
Right. And during World War I and World War II, quote-unquote safe often meant flying through artillery barrages.
The military records from those conflicts really highlight how critical they were as tactical infrastructure. In World War I, a French pigeon named Cher Ami was actually awarded the Croix de Guerre,
which is one of the highest military honors.
Yeah, for successfully delivering 12 critical messages. And Cher Ami completed these flights despite sustaining severe combat injuries.
The British even established the Dickon Medal in World War II, serving as the animal equivalent of the Victoria Cross. 32 pigeons received that medal for gallantry.
Birds like Patty, G.I. Joe, and Mary of Exeter.
Even the Girl Guides in Britain in 1943 recognized their strategic importance. They were actively raising funds to support the pigeon service and utilizing them to communicate with their world chief guide.
And the sheer logistical audacity of Operation Market Garden perfectly illustrates their value. The Allies pair dropped 82 pigeons into the Netherlands alongside the first airborne division signals.
Wait, they literally dropped birds out of airplanes?
Out of aircraft, yes, over occupied territory. And to deliver their intelligence, those birds had to navigate 240 miles across an active theater of war, cross the English Channel, and locate a specific wooden loft in London.
That is wild. But I mean, utilizing standard radios in that environment was a liability. Radio frequency transmissions could be intercepted or triangulated by German signal intelligence.
Exactly. A pigeon served as an untraceable, encrypted, organic data packet. The confidential pigeon service dropped hundreds of them into Northwest Europe simply to provide local resistance agents with a secure uplink.
And that biological reliability extended well beyond the military into literal life-or-death payloads for modern healthcare.
Oh, the hospital routes.
Yeah. Throughout the 1970s and 1980s, hospitals in Plymouth and Devonport in England, as well as several hospitals in France, utilized daily pigeon routes because pigeons can carry up to 75 grams of payload on their backs.
So administrators strapped unbreakable vials and laboratory blood specimens to them.
Exactly. They moved medical samples above congested city traffic every single morning. And the English hospital route only ceased operations in 1983 because one of the medical facilities permanently closed.
Not because the avian network failed.
Right. Which brings us to the mechanics of this entire phenomenon. Because here's where it gets really interesting. How does a bird dropped out of a military aircraft in the Netherlands physically locate a specific rooftop box in London?
It is genuinely one of the most heavily debated topics in animal navigation. The scientific community generally refers to it as the map and compass model.
Okay, map and compass?
Yeah. The compass aspect is relatively straightforward. Researchers basically agree the birds use the position of the sun to orient themselves directionally.
So the sun acts as the compass, providing the cardinal directions.
Right.
But the map, how the bird determines its starting coordinates relative to its home roost, is the unsolved variable.
Very much unsolved. For decades, the dominant hypothesis was the iron beak theory. Scientists identified clusters of iron particles in the upper beak of pigeons, assuming these particles aligned to the Earth's magnetic north.
Like a literal compass needle in their face.
Basically, yeah. They thought it functioned as a physical compass interfacing directly with the bird's neural network. It presented this really elegant anatomical solution.
Until a comprehensive study in 2012 completely dismantled it.
Completely. Researchers discovered those iron-rich cells were not magnetosensitive neurons at all. They were simply macrophages.
Which are immune system cells.
Right, immune cells that just happened to sequester iron. They possessed absolutely no connection to the pigeon's navigational neural pathways.
That revelation forced the scientific community to pivot toward the trigeminal nerve and a light-mediated mechanism in the pigeon's eyes.
Yeah, avian vision relies on specific retinal proteins called cryptochromes.
And this is the quantum mechanics part, right?
It is. When photons of light hit these proteins, they create a radical pair, essentially two entangled electrons. The Earth's magnetic field actually alters the quantum spin of these electrons.
That is just wow.
I know. And that chemical change signals the optic nerve. So the pigeon is theoretically perceiving the Earth's magnetic field as a dynamic visual overlay on the landscape.
Processed through literal quantum mechanics in its own retina.
Yeah, but this raises an important question, because magnetoreception is only one layer of the map. In the 1970s, researchers like Floriano Papi and later Hans Wallraff proposed olfactory navigation.
A spatial smell map. They argue that pigeons learn the spatial distribution of atmospheric odors circulating around their home roost.
So when released hundreds of miles away, they actively sample the air to determine the gradient of those familiar atmospheric chemicals.
They're essentially sniffing their way down the chemical gradient toward home. And then there's the GPS tracking data, which reveals a heavy reliance on visual landmarks, too.
Right. Homing pigeons will actively follow human-made road infrastructure.
Which is so funny to picture. They will fly down a highway, execute a hard 90-degree turn at a major intersection, and follow habitual human commuting routes.
They process and utilize the concrete infrastructure below them to supplement their map.
Okay, so think about this. It's like navigating a road trip by combining a compass, a smell-o-vision map, visually following the highway. But wait, that still struggles to explain navigation across entirely unfamiliar, featureless territory like open oceans.
Exactly.
Which is where geologist John Hagstrom comes in. His research suggests pigeons navigate using low-frequency infrasound, sound waves as low as 0.1 hertz.
These are the deep, continuous ambient vibrations of the planet itself. We're talking ocean waves crashing against distant continental shelves or massive wind currents pushing against mountain ranges.
And Hagstrom hypothesizes that pigeons use these pervasive environmental vibrations to mentally map the large-scale topography of the Earth.
The physiological hurdle there, though, is that a pigeon's inner ear is far too small to interpret a wave of that massive wavelength while sitting still.
Right. If their ears are too small to perceive a wave that long from a static position, they would have to physically move across the wave to measure it.
Which perfectly explains their release behavior. When a pigeon is first released from a cage, it rarely flies in a straight line immediately. It flies in a wide, sweeping circle.
To physically sample the massive infrasound wave at multiple spatial coordinates. That allows their neural network to piece together the full length of the wave and orient themselves to the continental landscape.
Yeah.
So they're like strapping a subwoofer to your head to feel the Earth vibrating.
Hagstrom's hypothesis perfectly accounts for that exact circular release behavior. And it forces us to consider how an animal's sensory perception entirely eclipses human capabilities. Top scientists still lack a unified consensus because the pigeons themselves refuse to use a standardized navigational system.
Charles Walcott's experiments at Cornell University proved they exhibit hyper-localized evolution. He released homing pigeons near a severe magnetic anomaly in the Earth's crust.
And birds from one specific loft were entirely disoriented by the anomaly. They just scattered.
But birds from a different loft, located just 1 mile down the road from the coast, flew straight home, completely unaffected by the magnetic interference.
One family of pigeons evolved to rely heavily on the magnetic field, while their immediate neighbors defaulted to atmospheric odors and infrasound.
They possess a profound biological redundancy. Utilizing whatever combination of navigational tools best suits their hyperlocal environment.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So what does this all mean? You would naturally assume the launch of telecommunication satellites and the laying of transoceanic fiber optic cables would permanently retire that biological toolkit.
You'd think so, yeah.
Yet their physical payload capacity has kept them surprisingly relevant. I mean, the world's first formal airmail stamps were actually issued for the Great Barrier Pigeongram service in New Zealand back in 1897.
And it went on much longer than that. Police in the Indian state of Odisha maintained an active, official pigeon messenger service for emergency communications following catastrophic natural disasters.
And that flock remained operational until 2002.
Retired only when the internet infrastructure finally stabilized in those remote regions.
The transition to the digital age sparked a fascinating bandwidth rivalry between the pigeon and the computer. Because pigeons carry physical payloads, they can carry high-density physical data storage.
Oh, the Winston experiment.
Yes. In 2009, an IT company in South Africa got so frustrated with the sluggish speeds of their local internet service provider, they initiated a data race.
They strapped a 4-gigabyte memory stick to an 11-month-old homing pigeon named Winston.
And released him to fly 50 miles across the country. Simultaneously, the IT staff began transferring the identical 4-gigabyte file over their ADSL broadband internet connection.
And Winston flew the 50 miles in 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Factoring in the time to retrieve the bird, detach the memory stick, and download the data onto the destination server, the total transfer took 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 57 seconds.
And in that exact same 2-hour window, the ADSL connection had only transferred 4% of the file.
It is incredible.
It really highlights a critical distinction in network architecture between speed and bandwidth. The internet offers unparalleled speed for small packets, but bandwidth, the sheer volume of data moved concurrently, can still be dominated by physical transport. Sometimes biology outpaces silicon.
The tech community actually acknowledges this dynamic in their own architecture, too. In 2001, an engineering group in Norway successfully tested RFC OVN 49, which is a functional, albeit humorous, internet protocol designated IP over avian carriers.
They successfully pinged a network by utilizing homing pigeons to physically carry the data packets.
And the protocol executed perfectly. But that same physical payload capacity facilitates illicit applications in the modern era, too.
Yeah, between 2009 and 2015, authorities in the Brazilian state of São Paulo intercepted numerous homing pigeons actively flying into heavily guarded prison complexes.
Because associates on the outside were strapping mobile phones, SIM cards, batteries, USB cords, and narcotics to the birds. A pigeon simply flies over the razor wire, evades the metal detectors, and lands in a specific cell window with pinpoint accuracy.
It is the exact same logistical model the English hospitals utilized to move biological samples in the 1970s, just seamlessly repurposed for the black market.
Because the underlying advantage remains the unyielding reliability of their biological programming. A pigeon's navigation system cannot be hacked, and its signal cannot be jammed. It simply executes its imperative to go home.
Exactly.
So the next time you walk down the street and see a gray pigeon pecking at a sidewalk, remember what you are actually observing. You are looking at the descendant of a highly evolved biological machine.
A creature that bridged ancient empires.
Yeah, one that provided early financial markets with their first high-frequency trading edge, served as an encrypted data packet during World War II, and literally beat broadband internet in a data transfer race.
They truly are living, breathing artifacts of our global communication infrastructure.
There was one final thought I want to leave you with, though. Something for you to mull over regarding our modern relationship with these networks. We spent this deep dive exploring their invisible maps, how they synthesize visual landmarks, quantum magnetic overlays, infrasound vibrations, and spatial atmospheric odors to navigate the globe.
But look at how rapidly humanity is altering that exact landscape today.
Exactly. We are terraforming the sensory environment at an unprecedented scale. We are building massive, sprawling wind farms that generate entirely new artificial frequencies of infrasound. We are erecting megacities that permanently alter the atmospheric odors of entire regions.
We're expanding concrete road grids and generating massive electromagnetic interference with high-voltage power lines.
Right. So if these birds rely on ancient invisible maps of sound, smell, and magnetism, we are inadvertently rewriting the topography of their world. As our modern technological footprint grows denser and more complex, it really leaves you wondering if we will eventually cause the greatest navigators in history to permanently lose their way home.